Right, here's a segment for you. What?
Nice. That's the end of that.
Did you enjoy the new segment?
It was great, yeah.
Okay, thanks. Listen, bitches, it's season 3, episode 9.
It is. Season 3.
Episode 9.
So how many bitches have you got then?
Lots of bitches, couple of hoes. By the way, this show may contain swearing, A-bombs, F-bombs, all the rest of this. I made Bradshaw.
What, A-bombs,
in the
F-bombs?
Studio, saying asshole and fuck.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's an F-bomb, isn't
no,
it?
No C-bombs, though.
No C-bombs.
Really? Is that
no. That's
see, I don't adopt to that rule.
We'll have
bombs.
You're
like...
if you're going to swear, swear. Don't draw a line at swearing.
No, you know, like, there's
a particular word.
You know, there's this mythical law in this country where if you commit treason, you get hung. It's the only hangable offence.
It's
right?
Lies.
Hey?
And it's lies, and it's hanged anyway.
But well, you're
hung a picture, you're hanged.
You can get away with it if you say allegedly first, though.
Well, the C-bomb, that's the only time you get an animal noise in Look Radio now.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's try it. That's a stupid rule.
Have you got time?
Prompt!
It's not interesting, but it's important.
Yes.
Oil, grass, water.
Grass is
what
important.
The fuck?
Certain open source and free software projects. They're not very interesting, but they're important.
I think Matt's turned into a road protester.
What's the difference, though? Come on, a couple of weeks ago, we received an email from a project that shall remain nameless. They were saying, would you be interested in doing an email with us? And we all sort of sat around and
who
said...
Who is that?
I'm not going to mention it. And
I'm just saying it.
What is he saying?
You
like?
Were the one who said it's... No, first.
Can you mime it to me?
No, it's too complicated. I'll tell you afterwards, right? Anyway, right, anyway, okay. The thing is...
Use
right,
international sign language. Or British.
No, enough.
Anyway, enough. The thing is, right... we all sat around and said, yeah, it's really important that we have that bit of software in the free software landscape.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But, my, would it make a weary, boring interview.
Right.
But, yeah, it would make a really boring interview.
Oh!
Yeah.
And, so that's not a reflection on the project.
It's no.
Just, people just, don't want to hear about it. It's important,
exactly,
but it's not interesting.
Yeah. And so...
Paper sizes.
If you mention the bloody paper size lobby, that's the only example you've got of this. And every time this discussion comes up, you go, oh, there's a guy who maintains a library of paper sizes.
Well, to be honest, though, I don't really want to go out and research loads of uninteresting facts.
You know, it's what you do for most of your articles.
Fair point.
Whereas paper sizes...
It's not a totally unreasonable point. Okay, I'll give you that.
So anyway, what is the difference between important and interesting and... Why should we give a fuck as a community if something's interesting, if it is in fact important?
Depends though, doesn't it? Because certain people find certain things interesting, like the paper sizes thing. Yeah. That bloke obviously finds doing that interesting.
Does he find it interesting because it's important?
I mean, I'm sure a lot of people find, you know, 3D graphics really
boring.
So
is your point the fact that people aren't working on these projects because they're not interesting?
Yeah, I mean,
they're fucking important and need to be done.
There's a certain... All right, yes, this leads on to a maybe a slightly wider question. Can we rely on a community that's driven by itch scratching to provide a full environment, a full ecology of software?
Or you do love dogs, don't you?
Or eh?
Scratching.
Or do we have to rely on companies like Sun, IBM, whoever, or I don't know, Sugar CRM, whoever, to provide us with those bits of software that are just never going to get written by someone who's a hobbyist?
Give us an example of something that's important and isn't interesting.
All right,
in the software world.
All right, not related to any real world project that I know of, but the software in cash machines, for example.
Right.
Right. Now, if you think about it, that's probably a really good case for free software because that's our fucking money, right. You know. And these are companies who have a control over a very, very important part of our lives. But it's
so
all proprietary software.
We should know the software.
Exactly. Source. We should know. And we should be able to have a knowledge of the security flaws and all that sort of stuff.
I think I think it's difficult because I don't think you can say a community could do it all themselves, or you definitely need the help of different companies because it's so inconsistent, because we've got seemingly boring things that the community looks after and we've also got seemingly boring things that the companies look after as well, so it seems fairly inconsistent. So
I
think people find people have different expectations of what interesting is. You know, we all like
certain
things.
To a certain extent, yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of. I mean, that was what was implied by the Cathedral and the Bazaar when it originally came out. The idea was that for any given task, whether it was as boring as a paper sizes library or whatever, there'd be someone somewhere who found it interesting, they'd be involved in the free software community, therefore it would cover everything. But I think everyone would agree that you get a lot more hackers on cool-looking projects than you do on boring ones.
If you're going to be spending hours coding, you want it to at least be on something that's really interesting, don't you?
And I take Jono's point that different people find things interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I would find working on a mail server interesting. Lots of people would find it the dullest thing ever.
Yeah, but still, it's a high-profile thing, and it's, you know... But I just don't think we've got enough monkeys to type Shakespeare, basically, in the free software community for free.
It's not, but even then, it's... I suppose it depends on what you need. I mean, for example, Raccoon Show isn't particularly interesting to a lot of people.
Self-pimping.
But that's something I needed. So that's why I wrote, which is the scratching your own itch thing.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't dedicate my entire life to working on it because I don't find it that interesting.
But it's not that important either.
It is to a certain subset of people. Now, right, if you're talking...
But what I mean by important, then, is things such as... I don't know. So basically, the idea would be that you as a business would never, or as an individual, would never have to touch free proprietary software. Now, okay, Raccoon Show does fill a gap within that ecology, as I called it earlier. But there are certain things such as, well, GCC is an example of something that is absolutely vital, but people really seem to enjoy hacking on compilers and things like that. It's a small subset of people.
Yeah.
But there are things out there that people just don't, such as... I don't know, point-of-sale software, which isn't particularly interesting.
So is Bounty...
But it is important.
But again, that's only important
uncool stuff.
But it's not enough to have a... Well, sorry, is it enough to have a bounty where you just sort of say, okay, I'll pay you this bit of money if you do this? Isn't it...
It doesn't seem to be. People have offered bounties for things that still aren't there. You know, I mean, one example is that Internet Explorer can save a web page... with all its constituent elements in one file. It's called an MHT.
Yeah,
an MHTML
file.
This
before,
yeah. And people would like Mozilla to be able to do that because it would be dead handy for shipping a complete web page with all its things around.
Mm.
And Mozilla won't open those. No one stepped up to do it. And people have put together money to offer a bounty and still no one has stepped up to do it. Now, conceivably,
people.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, a lot of people have said, well, we don't really want Mozilla to do that. We don't really see the point in it. It's not really useful. On the other hand, there are some people who do see the need in it. They feel that it is important, and they're prepared to offer money, and still no one wants to step up. So just bounties on their own aren't enough to motivate. You do still need someone who finds it vaguely interesting.
There's a whole kind of economy.
Or more money.
There's a whole economy of bounties as well, isn't there? Because people who charge, let's say, £200-300 a day hacking on stuff, there's probably not going to be enough money to go around for the bounties.
No.
By the very definition, bounties are for hobbyists.
They're small one-shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if I was a freelance hacker and I charge, you know, a contractor, I'd charge 200, 250 or £300 a day or whatever. That seems to be what web people charge. Say I charge £300 a day and someone offered £1,000 bounty, which is pretty high for bounties, to be honest with you. Most bounties are less than that.
They're more like $200 most.
Yeah, if someone offered £1,000 as a bounty, which would be about $2,000, then that would last me 3 days.
Yeah.
So if the feature is something that's going to take me longer than 3 days to code, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So you are only going to get hobbyists. You're not going to get people who are going to devote real paid time to this.
And that seems to be the real downside to bounties. They seem like a really nice idea, but I get the impression that...
And maybe open source software?
Eh?
And maybe open source software?
It's not a totally unreasonable argument.
Possibly.
It's one that's been made before.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, my concern is just that I look around at what is available now after, say, let's say that the free software open source movement has had mainstream momentum for, say, 4 or 5 years now. Would that be fair?
Mainstream?
Mainstream.
Don't know.
I'd say a bit less.
I'd say a bit less.
All right, let's say three or four years, yeah? And in that time, that's built on... Basically, a core set of work that's been going on for about 20 years, right? Maybe a little bit more.
Right.
Uh-huh.
What do we have to show for it in terms of things that really, really prove the whole point of Cathedral and Bazaar to be correct? You know, we've got an office suite that works. We've got a browser that is very, very good. But is Firefox kind of a freak that kind of
GCC.
Okay, GCC. So we got, but basically,
GCC is roughly commensurate with commercial composers. Right. I mean, the GCC people might say it was better, but other people would say Visual C++ okay, was better. Whatever.
But my sort of question is it really working? Is it just going to turn out that free software development and open source methods and everything are just okay for certain situations, and it's just not going to work for everything?
I think if you look at it's a big question, obviously, and again, it depends on which bit of the cathedral and the bazaar, because I don't think that everything in that book applies to every project.
Yeah.
But I'd say the scratch-your-own-itch philosophy really is a success. I'd say that pretty much most device drivers are scratch-your-own-itch.
Okay.
I'd say that most utilities are scratch-your-own-itch. The whole... I think it starts to break down when it comes to really large applications and when you've got vendors involved. So OpenOffice is kind of an exception, I'd say, to the rule.
Right, okay.
And Firefox to a point, but that's part of the reason why I think with Firefox, because they've basically created a very straightforward core and then you can extend it in lots of ways, they've leveraged that part of it because people want to write their own things, but they don't want to understand a massive code base.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the whole Firefox thing is, has been quite successful.
Yeah.
And they need to do that because people just want to hack on the thing that they're interested in. They don't want to have to sort of tread water to try and get
so that means that someone has to create a framework within a project then that is more than scratching your own itch.
You see, their
itch has to be to allow other people to facilitate other people to scratch their itches.
I understand
which
your
is
theory,
fucking bizarre,
but unfortunately, it's bullshit, right? well, it's not bullshit, but I have a really really big counter example, which is OpenOffice, because OpenOffice has an entire development environment built inside it, Star Basic. And people don't use it very much.
Well, what's your point?
People, if you look at Microsoft Office, Microsoft Office is a huge monolithic software suite, which you said might not be possible, but Firefox is possible because they stripped it down to a core and then allowed people to extend it the way they wanted to. And people write Word and Excel macros all the time, and people build products which are nothing more than plugins to Word, and there hasn't been that level of development using OpenOffice as a platform.
Billions of people use Microsoft Office. They get paid to. They get paid to be trained to do it.
Paid to use it.
Oh, yeah.
And they get paid to use it, yeah.
Yeah.
At work, obviously.
Oh, okay.
Right? OpenOffice is largely still used by a certain subset of people who are using it as a hobby.
Fair play, but the point was that just providing a framework on which people can scratch their own itches and not have to compile all of OpenOffice doesn't necessarily apply, because we have that framework and people still aren't using it.
No, you see, that's where you're fucking wrong, okay? Because the point, I think, where you're wrong in your example of OpenOffice is, first of all, I think the general perception of Star Basic is that it's incomplete. I mean, that's the first thing. The kind of people who are going to be thinking about writing software are going to look for a degree of completeness, and I think a lot of people don't have any confidence in Star Basic. I think that's the first thing. The second thing,
Word macro language, is complete, is it?
I'd say it's a damn sight more complete than Star Basic.
And people paid to train on it, paid to use it.
The other thing, documentation is the other thing. But the third thing,
yes,
the third thing is that when I said about extending it, I wasn't referring to the end user, and even programmers of Word macros, I'd consider end users. I'm talking about people actually hack on the application itself.
Right.
So Firefox, people who create extensions are hacking on the extending the application itself, as opposed to creating web pages that run in the application, if you see what I mean.
But that's what Star Basic's for. It's for adding your own menu items and your own plugins and things which go away and get that document from your CMS or something like that. That's exactly what it's for.
Yeah, but I'd say...
And people are not using it like that.
Yeah, but and that's why I'm saying I think it harks back to the fact that people perceive it as being A, incomplete, and B, there's no fucking documentation. It's like Zool. I mean, Zool, so when it started out, nobody used it because there was no documentation. Now a lot more people are using it because there's lots and lots of existing code.
Except the little black character with the funny hat.
Yeah.
How can I put this to you, right? We're using Zool for a project. There is not lots and lots of existing code. There is Firefox, which is not currently a Zool Runner application.
Right.
And there are some example things.
When you say we, you mean at work?
At work, yeah.
What about
and there's Song Player or Songbird or whatever it's called, which is new.
And there's the Mozilla Amazon browser.
Oh yeah, the Mozilla Amazon browser. But that's not a proper application. No, it's a technology demo.
No, but the point I'm making is that in the early days, nobody fucking used it. Yeah, there was no documentation.
Yeah,
at all.
I mean, there's a little bit more, and it's starting to pick up a little bit of momentum. And maybe Star Basic will do the same. Maybe it'll be Visual Basic for applications 2 years down the line.
Yeah. Widening it out a little bit more, though, but I'll bring it back to the original question: what is interesting? What's important? Should we just
sum it up?
I mean.
But you want us to list things that are interesting?
It depends.
No.
Right.
Important is what I do. Interesting is what you do.
And that's the problem with the open source community.
Yeah.
A couple of my friends, well into open source.
Yeah.
But they have to keep Windows around. Because they're gamers.
Right.
And they like to play all the latest games. And so my question is...
What's your question, Aid?
My question is...
What's your question, Aid?
Linux, is it ever going to be good as a games platform?
Who knows?
Good question.
No, hang on. There are two different sides to that.
Okay.
First side is it ever going to be technically capable of being a games platform?
That wasn't really the question I was asking, but I know
And the second side is, are people ever going to bother developing games for it?
Yeah.
The first side, I think, the technical thing, if people were trying to develop games for Linux now, lots of commercial things, then it would be good enough, you know?
Would it?
Well, presumably. Yeah, I mean, you could build games with OpenGL and so on. Quake runs on... Linux, and
I get the impression there's going to be some games developers listening to this.
No, don't be ridiculous.
Yeah.
They could write it in machine code, but like they bloody did in the old days.
I don't think that the technical problems are the insurmountable issue.
You're right.
People aren't writing
in the old
stuff
days,
for games.
You used to just ditch the OS. You used to kick the OS at the earliest opportunity and just run pure game.
Yes,
16K of game, yeah.
What I fucking want to do is boot up my Linux machine and then... shut it all down and reboot with a fucking boot floppy, yes. And edit my auto-exec dot bat. That was shite, and everyone was very glad when it went away.
God, yeah. Those old days.
Absolutely.
But I don't think the technical issues are the problem, really.
It's ISVs, isn't it?
It's the fact that people aren't developing games for Linux, and therefore there's no market, and therefore no one does develop games for Linux. So you think
that we've got a solid graphics platform that we can write for, and then you just write one game, and it'll just run on all of these Linux platforms, but it's just that nobody's writing it at the moment.
I think that people would get around that problem. If I don't know, pick a games...
Because you've got DirectX now, haven't you?
Rockstar Games, right?
US Gold.
If they brought out their new game and they thought, we're going to make this run on Linux because there are millions and millions and millions of people who will buy it and want to run it on Linux, they'd get around the problem in the same way that the Code Reavers people have got around the problem of making stuff run on different Linux distributions. Yes, it's a pain in the arse, but you'd do it if there was a market.
The thing is...
But wouldn't you have to have the equivalent of DirectX?
But with all that money sloshing around, someone would write it, wouldn't they?
Oh, so it's like a baseball field, is it?
What?
Build it and they will come.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think if you had loads of people wanting to write games for Linux, then OpenGL would get tricked up into being the new DirectX, really.
Right.
Well, no, because there's no motive for anyone to do it, because no one would buy the games they build with OpenGL.
Can I take you back to...
Don't have to put your hand up.
A world some time ago.
Put your hand up. Don't have to put your hand up.
That's so we don't talk over each other, Stuart.
Yeah, exactly. Can
Keep
I take
up,
you back
will you?
To a world some time ago? Commodore 64, Amstrad CPC, Spectrum, Dragon 32. Linux is the Dragon 32 of the modern games world.
Puffed
the
away.
Reason people aren't writing for it is because people aren't using it for games enough to justify basically the multi-million pound investment.
That's bullshit. The reason why people aren't making commercial Linux games is because there's no fucking audience. That's why.
There's no market for it. You said
people aren't making games.
No, I didn't. I said they're not making them because people aren't.
I got the impression that when you said that you were meaning that people just aren't using Linux as a platform for games.
Sorry, I meant there's no market for it.
No, yeah, there's no market for it at all.
There is a very small market.
Exactly as I said.
Not enough to justify the millions of pounds of development that they put into them these days.
There is a chicken and eggs... It is a chicken and egg situation.
That's what I said.
Which you did say, and you quite absolutely right. People won't write games for it until there are lots of people who want to buy games for it, but people won't buy it to run games for it. But until there are games to run on.
So the short answer is just keep running.
And
with
we can't compare it to the older days, because there's so much more development time and money seems to go into modern games. I mean, I know that if you look at the rate of inflation, a lot of it's some of it will balance out. But if you look at it, I mean. Games nowadays are real full-on multimedia production.
Sure, but my thing about the Dragon 32 was simply that it died because there was no market
for
it.
Oh, no, I know in terms of your point, but a lot of people do compare it to, yeah, do you remember when the fucking Bitmap brothers were doing this and the Darling brothers were doing that?
Yeah, you can't write a $1.99 Mastertronics game in your bedroom.
Exactly.
Anymore.
To be honest with you, I think that what we need to do to make Linux a suitable platform for games is just keep doing what we're doing and ignoring games and get people using Linux for other reasons.
Exactly, yeah.
And if 50% of the world are using Linux, there will be a reasonable portion of those people who are gamers, and then games companies will start releasing games
for it. No, because those people will have kept a Windows machine to play games on.
No, but that means that no one would ever write a game for a PlayStation Portable, for example, because on the day it came out, there weren't that many games.
No, because Sony have put loads of guarantees that they're going to market it like hell and
that's
all that.
That's got to be the weakest fucking comparison.
Nobody
will write games for a PlayStation Portable.
Well, that's the point. At the moment, the day it came out, there wasn't a market for PlayStation Portable games because nobody owned them.
Sony hyped it up and guaranteed
a market, don't they?
Exactly.
But what Sony have also got is a complete development platform for that, whereas we don't have that.
Sony have got there, but it's not just development, is it? It's I mean, I'd liken games.
Hang on, just before you go on. What do you mean Sony have got a complete development platform for it? All the Sony people run fucking Linux on their PlayStations. We found that out when we talked to Sarah Ewan.
Anyway.
That's not... The development platform is GCC for games.
Yeah.
That's what they said. So, and we do have that.
No, but
you
can't deny
that. But that's not... Again, it's not the same, though. It's just because they use GCC, that's only part of it. The real thing will be all of their proprietary games development tools, in the same way that the reason why Grand Theft Auto has been so successful is partially due to the fact that they use RenderMan for everything, and that's a proprietary games platform.
Well, yeah, but there's no reason why you can't still build all your things. If you're a games developer... Well, you can't still build all your things in 3D Studio Max if that's what you like, and then export all the meshes and use them in a Linux game. I mean, whether Linux will ever be a suitable games development platform is an entirely different question to whether it will ever be a suitable games running platform.
Yeah, but you...
I mean, no one develops games on a PlayStation 30, on PlayStation Portable either, do they?
No, no.
Develop on a bloody Windows box.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's predominantly down to... It is down to market, because I don't think technology is necessarily the problem.
No.
I suspect that there are... I mean, I don't know much about DirectX compared to OpenGL, but I suspect that OpenGL is on the weaker side of it.
Yes. I mean, as I understand it, OpenGL is not as good as DirectX. But do you think if 90% of the people using computers in the world were using Linux, the games companies go, well, Linux isn't a very good platform, we'll still release games for Windows and cut out 90% of our market? Or do you think they'd go, no, let's fucking well fix OpenGL?
Well, exactly. They'd do that. But just on a slightly different tack, if all things being equal, so imagine OpenGL was... perfect, you know, and everything.
Imagine something that isn't true is true, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what hypothesis is about. I don't know if you're familiar with the concept.
Anyway,
just imagine all things are equal for a moment. Do you think, but we don't have, Linux doesn't have the same market share as Windows. Linux has a market share it has now.
Keep going.
Do you think that developers would continue to avoid Linux for games? Because there's a cultural idea or in a perception, whether it's right or wrong,
that the question's too hard for me, mate. Sorry, you've lost me.
Okay, knob. Basically, do you think games developers look at Windows and look at Linux and think, Windows, people are used to paying money for Windows things. Linux, people are used to getting things for free, so what's the point? There's no market. They're prepared to pay for stuff.
I don't think so.
Right, okay.
The one thing that I was going to say, which is fairly similar, is I suspect... I don't know whether... Because Linux is kind of heading in a... Is people are really pushing Linux in kind of an enterprise-y office sort of environment sort of thing. You know, they're going on the whole enterprise thing. I don't know whether, because it's not really seen so much as a consumer operating system, it's seen that you can use Linux, and Linux is great on desktop so long as you've got a system administrator. And I don't know whether that is going to...
I think Linspire might disagree.
In the same way that people probably don't run games on fucking Novell NetWare sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the Linspire people believe there is a segment of the market who will be interested in Linux as a computer operating system, as a consumer operating system that people are prepared to pay for. If they are right, that same market or a subset of that market is gamers. But if they are wrong, then... games won't ever happen on Linux. If people are genuinely not prepared to pay for Linux and things on Linux, then there won't ever be a games
market. But games are not going to happen on Linux until Linux can do kind of... Games are kind of... Because games are a leisure thing. Games aren't going to happen on Linux, and people until people can use Linux for everything else that they actually need to use stuff for. So unless people can do all their word processing and do their accounts and all the rest of it on Linux, they're not going to keep it around as a main operating system. So therefore, they're not going to be interested in using it as their only operating system.
Yeah, but gamers, but I see
games as the final thing that, you know, you're getting rid of Windows, so you can do your office stuff on Linux, you can do X, Y, Z on Linux, you can do all of that. The final thing that you can't do at the moment is games.
Yeah, but I know a number of Mac people who are really excited about the Intel hardware for Mac because it means that they're going to be able to run Windows to play games on. Mac, as a platform, has a long-established user base of people who are paying for software, and you can do everything on it, but all these people still keep Windows machines to play games on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know what the point is, but I just thought I'd make a
observation. But that's the thing, it's a kind of a cultural difference, isn't it? Is that people tend to use...
It's weird, because, I mean, games is something that's cool. So why isn't everyone working on this problem?
People are working on it. The problem is, again, what you've got is you've got a lot of programmers working on the problem.
Yeah.
And you don't have a lot of artists, you don't have a lot of sound designers. So what you end up with is really, 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 really...
Are you talking about open source games versions, or commercial games?
Bear with me. Really, really complicated versions of NetHack. Because commercial people have no motive to do it, because there's no market to sell their product. And open source people don't have the ability to do it, which is why we haven't got any... You know, we haven't got Max Payne 2 or the equivalent on Linux.
Yeah, suit Larry.
Because you've got no one to do all the artwork.
We should speak to someone actually who is involved in artwork and free software.
Yes, we should.
Yes, let's do that.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where the technology is not really the problem. It's just market. And until people can use Linux as a complete desktop operating system, they're not going to want games on. I don't think there's going to be enough market for games.
I don't think just one tiny part. I don't think it's just that, because I think most Mac people would say they can use their Macs as a complete desktop operating system, but again, there aren't any games on the Mac either, and it's purely that there aren't enough Macs, and therefore there aren't games. People don't think it's worthwhile to spend a lot of time developing a game where only 10% of the computer buying public can buy the game.
But that's essentially the same thing, isn't it? Because if Linux worked as a complete desktop in the same way that Mac works as a complete desktop,
then it might have the same market share as Mac.
Then it might have 10%. The same market share and gets no
5%,
and it gets no games. Whereas if Linux or Mac grows in market share, it doesn't really matter which one it gets the games.
Yes, some people do argue though that Linux now has greater desktop penetration than Mac. Now I would argue that Mac probably still has greater home desktop penetration, but the thing is that the Mac platform does have quite, I think, one or two at least publishers who specialise in porting across Windows games for that market.
Yeah.
So,
and I bet they're going to die a death in this
Linux.
Well, Loki games.
That's exactly what, no, but that exactly was too early. They came in too early, I reckon, Loki.
I think a distinction between the two is that the vast majority of Mac people, as Matt says, are people who are used to getting software and paying for it. And the vast majority of Linux people at the moment are people who are used to using it because it's free software and therefore don't want to pay money for stuff on it.
Jakob Steiner is the man who works on the Tango project.
Friendly bacteria.
Friendly bacteria. Yep.
No, he's not Yakult, he's Jakob.
Also known as Jumak.
I'm into the song.
Yeah.
No, never mind
that. All night.
No, you spoiled the moment.
The one time when we expect you to do the fucking song.
So, he's the Tango Project
guy,
right?
He's involved in the Tango Project. He does icons. We talk about artists quite a bit.
We do.
And we don't actually speak to artists.
Let's do it.
So, we've pulled the collective Lug Radio finger out, and we're speaking to Yakult Steiner.
Jakob, you're on Lug Radio.
Welcome.
Hello there.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Excellent. So tell us about what you do for a living.
I do what I sort of love to do, and that's... making my, and not only my desktop pretty, I've started to do some interface design lately, but I'm not really very confident doing that. But
right.
Most of the time I do graphics.
Okay. And what kind of graphics do you do?
Well, it's most of the time that I spend in a graphic editor, I do icons. But it's the whole branding thing for our desktop products. So it's splash screens, wallpapers, window yeah. manager themes, color schemes, everything.
Right.
Yakult, do you yeah. think that
quick phone pass
Oi
there?
Candy is important in the desktop, or is it just something that we can ditch? It's a debate we had a while ago. Is iCandy important?
Well, it definitely is important to me, because if it wasn't important, I probably wouldn't have a job.
Good point.
But yes, of course. I mean, to a lot of us, working with a computer takes considerable amount of time,
and absolutely.
It's usually good to be looking at something that doesn't. That does look pretty, and you're.
It's illegal in some countries.
Okay, working with it. So,
cool. Yeah. Another question that we've talked about in the past is how we get artists involved in the open source community. I mean, whatever the GNOME community are doing, it's obviously working really well because there are two of you, you and Tiger T, and that's it. So, what motivated you to get involved? And feel free to call me a liar and tell me there are millions of artists and I don't know about them.
Yeah, there's quite a load of newcomers lately. I mean,
really?
We started the Tango project, which we can possibly talk yeah. about later on.
Okay.
And there's quite a few guys that are sort of having the good touches, and I don't really know how to interest more artists onto the free software. World, but
what motivates you to do it?
Doesn't it require to have like large amounts of people? I mean, it's I actually believe the same thing is true for software as well. You don't really need an army of developers for a project to be successful. You just need a few
really good ones,
highly
yeah.
motivated and
productive,
possibly
yeah.
cool. paid as well, so they could do it for a living.
Money always helps.
You can motivate pretty much anybody if you pay them, I think. Do you want to talk a bit about, you mentioned the Tango project there, and part of obviously as a small part at least of what that's trying to do is set up some art that other people can draw on, so you don't need as many artists in each individual project. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, well, mainly, I mean, initially, the Tango project was a bit more broad. It wasn't dealing only about, the looks or icons, but I sort of like to focus on small steps, do something that's doable in a reasonable time frame, and just, once you're done, then step on to
yeah.
A bigger thing. So okay. right now, I think what the Tango project is about is defining a common style for icons, so that when you're running free software applications on your desktop, each application that you run does not look completely different from the other, which is the current situation. So we try to define some style that would also not be dramatically, stylistically
yeah.
unique, so that applications that would have icons drawn based on these guidelines would look okay with existing styles.
Sure.
So that's essentially what Tango is. We also, Andreas, Nelson, Thomas, Gareth, Lazash, I'm probably pronouncing their names weirdly.
You won't do worse than we do.
That's all right.
Ryan Collier, they all, draw a lot of icons, but it's not the icon theme that's important about the project. It's about the style that, if somebody is writing an application and is wondering, okay, so how should my application look? Well, in future, we only deal with
yeah.
icons right now. So how should our icons look? They can just, be pointed to this document. Okay, these are the style guides. You can draw them yourself. You can ask somebody, from the Tango project, or you can just ask somebody else to draw it for you. But there's
Yeah.
defined style for people to
okay
yeah right There's been a lot of discussion recently about iCandy on the desktop with the Tango project and, you know, better better desktop, and there's been XGL as well. As an artist, you know, as we acknowledged in the previous episode, there's not many of you guys around. So, as a creative thinker, where do you want to see the desktop going? What do you want to see on your desktop in 5 years?
Britney Spears.
I don't know, man. I can tell you what I don't want to see.
Yep,
that's
good.
I don't want to see a mishmash of styles that's still lurking in there. I mean, we've done this with GNOME. We've cleaned it up after all these years so that it doesn't look like there's no
yeah.
ugly XPM icons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what we all want to see, or not see.
For them to jump at you. But then there's, you know, there's not only GNOME. I mean, you can be running the GNOME desktop, but you sure will, you know, launch Firefox, and you're going to launch OpenOffice. You're going to launch applications outside of the desktop. So I sort of would like to actually, like, minimize, you know, we've drawn so many icons out there, and if you want to theme your desktop, there's thousands of icons that you have to theme if you want to have like an accessible high contrast theme.
Yeah.
You have to draw thousands of icons. So I'd rather want like a base set of icons that are easily themeable.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Yeah.
But inevitably.
So it's consistency. I don't really like, for example, what happened with Windows XP, where they had, you know, icons back from the 95 days, where you had, you know, these some control center applications or stuff like that, that were using the old style. So that's what I don't want to see.
Okay.
And what I want to see on my desktop,
us naked.
Well, the XGL stuff is really nifty in that it is eye candy, but it's also making stuff very usable. Like, we probably, all of us, really love the concept of virtual workspaces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people like my dad have problem, you know, understanding that concept. He just, when I, you know, show him, or maybe he accidentally pushes the keyboard combination, he sees his Windows disappear and is like, "Oh, crashed." Yeah. But if you have the nice animation,
a nice
fluent
scroll
animation on your desktop, you can see, you know, it slides away, so you perfectly see what's happening in there. Similarly, minimizing your applications, everything, like the human eye is very sensitive to animation, and you can see.
All right.
You know, stuff much, you can notice things
when
you have, like, notifications, you can see them coming, you know, what application is notifying me about something and stuff like that.
So,
also, stuff just doesn't, you know, jump at you. You run an application, suddenly there's this window that pops up, and you get a fluent fade in. It's much, I mean, it is eye candy, but it's also,
you know, functional.
Having it's got a practical element to it.
You and your colleagues do a lot of work, and then the distributions come along and apply their own themes and their own way of doing things to your work. So Ubuntu will come along, Fedora, they'll all come along and basically trash what you've done. Well, not trash it, but they'll change it to the way they want it to look. How does that make you feel? Because surely a lot of people won't actually see your work.
Well, there's one thing about this is that, for example, I said that, you know, most of my work consists of doing icons. Unfortunately, many distributions think of icons as a mean to brand their product. That's bad. I mean,
it is.
The icon should be an aid to help you, you know, figure out a functionality.
Yeah.
And so I really would like the Tango style guidelines, you know, being picked up on the Linux desktop. That's what I would like. But, you know, it is something that, you know, distributions do, so it should be. The Tango project also, you know, has stuff that makes these easy, such as the naming scheme. I mean, if we have a standardized way of naming icons, then it's going to be easier if, you know, applications yeah. or other desktops comply with that naming scheme. It's going to be easier just to come up with a single icon theme and all your icons suddenly work on all desktops, all applications.
Cool. Okay, one final quick question.
Yeah. Final one.
Do you think that do you think that artists need to be born artists, or can anybody learn to do decent art for the Linux desktop?
Well, you can certainly learn. I don't really, you know, think of myself as being an artist. I'm really like a craftsman.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like workflows and you know, things that you learn. I mean, I definitely, when I started working for Zimian, I definitely didn't know how to draw icons.
Right.
It was just the nice guy, Thomas Korsmanen, who just went through and showed me how to do stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But what you need to do, what you need to have is this, like, a sense of... everybody thinks that he's got a, you know, good artistic sense or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
only, well, from, well, that's, well, let's not get in there, but I mean.
Sure. I've got a quick question then. The Tango guidelines.
Yeah?
Can we find them online? And if so, yeah, what's sure. the URL?
It's on the Tango web project is on tango-project.org.
Okay.
And there's like a big, there's like three icons pointing to the most important stuff
yep.
in there. So there's a link in there.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much for joining
Brilliant.
Us on Lug Radio.
Well,
it's been
yeah,
good to talk
fantastic.
To you.
For inviting
it's
me.
Been nothing but interesting.
Exactly, yeah. Can we catch up with you for a 5-minute update at some point in the future?
Yeah, sure.
Excellent.
Brilliant. Thanks,
Jack. Thanks again.
Thank you. Yuckles. Cheers.
What the Fook Boot Fook!
Welcome to What the Fook Boot Fook.
The second of five.
You bunch of morons.
Sponsored by Lancashire.
Shut that door.
Shut that door.
Aye,
Luke,
lad.
Check out my kook book.
Get some up butt.
So who's talking about books this week then?
You are, yeah, AD.
Not what? Me this week, son.
So which book are you going to talk about?
Akalaka.
Me? I don't know what a book is.
The other one.
I bet I grew up somewhere civilised. I'm talking about a book.
What, in a wheelie
like.
Bin?
More civilised than fucking Lancashire.
Lancashire.
This right. week, you have mostly been reading...
Not particularly this week, but the idea of this was to pick books that we
sure.
thought embedded the hacker ideal or something, or would interest people who are interested in the sort of things we're interested in.
In other words, our favourite books.
Yeah.
Well put, Johnny.
So, what's your favourite book this week?
The book that I would pick to get you into the mentality of free software is The Cuckoo's Egg by Clifford Stoll.
Oh. I still don't see what that's got to do with the open source.
What is it? Tell us about it. Before we debate it, tell us what it's about.
The book is about Clifford Stoll. It's a true story, mostly. It's a dramatisation, but it's a true story. And Clifford Stoll was an astronomer at the University of Berkeley in California.
Right.
And, he was system administrator as well.
Right.
And
right.
he noticed a small discrepancy in the amount of... They used to charge people for computer time.
Oh.
And he noticed a small discrepancy between the amount of computer time that had been used and the amount of computer time that had been paid for, and started right. investigating. And it turned out to be someone had owned the machines at Lawrence Berkeley.
Oh, right, okay.
And the book goes on for ages describing how he got into finding out where they were coming from, what they'd done, how they compromised the machines.
Yep.
They compromised hundreds of machines all over the, you know, the ARPANET back then, early version of the internet.
It's really interesting.
It's a rip-roaring paper,
fascinating book.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Anything else?
I've actually seen him on TV, because he actually dramatised it.
Cliff Stahl,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a bit of a loony now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Apparently, he goes around telling people that no one should use computers as a real kind of anti-computer lunatic.
Brilliant.
It is a good book, though.
Right. Apparently, according to...
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Because that's a catch-all safety
valve. We're then safe, aren't we?
Yeah.
Don't say.
No! No, you aren't.
So why do you like the cuckoo's egg?
Cuckoo's egg! I like it because it's like an adventure story. Except
get to choose which page to turn to?
It's not like a choose-your-own-adventure story.
Pick up the pork pie, then turn to page 38.
Your inventory is full. It's like an adventure story. It's like reading a James Bond book, except no one shoots anybody else. It's all about computers.
Oh, can I borrow it?
It's a bit slow in the middle, though, isn't it?
There are a couple of bits.
Got up, check me hacker's logs.
Sounds like Michael Mix's diary.
Michael Mix got up, pulled logs.
It is a bit like that. But to be honest with you, that's because it's a true story and not a thriller.
Yeah, but there are lots of true stories, but you just cut the guff out.
You cut all the shit out, don't you?
Well,
it's a great book, but they could have cut half of it out.
I think the book kind of does show that it takes a hacker to catch a hacker.
Yeah,
if you see what I mean.
But
it's that whole mindset behind how he
touches two different uses of the word hacker in one sentence.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes a hacker, a creative creative programmer who's interested in computers, to catch a hacker, bloke who owns machines.
Takes hackers to cracker.
Yeah, you know, and that's the point. The whole way he goes about things, the whole ethos,
to me,
is very kind of. It fits in very well with the whole free software mentality.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, I mean, some of the stuff he's talking about is free software. He's talking about his cracker using holes in Emacs and in Vi and so on to compromise machines. These holes were all patched 15 years ago.
That's the only reference to free software in the book.
Yeah, but there is...
I read the book because you said you should read The Cuckoo's Egg, mentions Emacs in it. And I went away and read it, and it mentions Emacs
read a book
all of which
was a true statement. The book.
Hang on, you listened to him say, "Read this book; it mentions Emacs," and you read the book
because it mentioned Emacs.
I fucking love Emacs. It's my favorite. I just spend all day in Emacs.
You spend none of your day.
I spend all my day in Chinmax. That's right.
Someone's probably made that, but it's not the fact that he talks about free software useful. He thinks in the same sort of way that free software people think, and that's why I think it's a really good book. If you're not interested in... If you don't know a lot about open source software or whatever, and you pick up the book and you read it and you think it's fascinating, you're likely to like the free software community and the free software concept.
I don't know. I think it's an interesting
it's
book.
Stretch,
it's an interesting book, but I don't really relate it to free software. I think it's just... It's an interesting story about what happened, about something that was seemingly nothing turned into this massive caper. And it's really got nothing...
Because you saw the word massive. Caper.
Yeah, it was a rip-roaring adventure.
The only time I've ever heard anyone use the word caper like that is when they're talking about the Italian job.
It turns into this big caper, right?
Yeah.
And because it's started off as nothing, it goes into something. Mm-hmm. And
that's what a caper
is. I don't really think of it as a free software thing. It's just this guy... managing to just delve deeper and deeper. And the other thing is the politics of the NSA and the CIA and the BFA and the ABC and the
and the MOFOs
and the
BFA. Yeah.
And yeah.
We get it.
thanks for that, John. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
No, so,
I
got bored in that.
I think if you find the book interesting, you're likely to find the free software.
Thanks for that wisdom.
You're likely to find the free software community interesting to be a part of.
Great.
Okay, we've got Dave Neary on the line.
And hey, Dave.
All right, Dave, how's it going?
Hi, Al. I'm pretty well.
You doing well?
No wonder they call him Bolsh.
Yeah, we just had a bit of a cold snap, so recovering from the snow.
So tell us about the Libre Graphics meeting.
Right, well, the Libre Graphics meeting, it started off as an idea around about the end of last summer to have a GIMP conference in conference of the GIMP developers in Lyon, because there are two of us here, myself and David Oden. And when we started going on it, there was an idea to have some presentations for students and whatnot. So I started asking around if there was anybody interested in coming along, giving a presentation of something other than the game.
Yeah,
I was talking to some of the Scribus guys.
Oh, cool.
And they said they'd come along, that they were looking for an opportunity to have a Scribus meeting at some stage, and it really went from there. So by the time I got some Inkscape guys involved, and I'd been on to Charles Moore and Zara, there was really no point in calling it the GIMP conference anymore.
Sounds about right.
So we brainstormed for about 30 seconds and came up with the Libro Graphics meeting.
Sounds excellent.
And so we're going to have basically developers from a bunch of projects there. The idea is not so much to have, you know, meetings and presentations and have something going on all the time so that you come away and you say, whoa, that was great, but I didn't get a chance to talk to anyone. Our goal is to have, yes, have some presentations, yes, show off the programs.
Yeah.
But really the goal is to just get people in the same place and give them space and time to work together and figure out what's going to happen themselves.
Wicked. Cool.
So it's really a cross between a kind of a traditional conference and a bar camp or something like that.
Sounds superb. So is this going to be kind of an annual thing?
Well, that's a big question. I'm only organising the first one. but yeah, there's been some interest already from some of the Inkscape guys in having one stateside.
Cool.
Because most of their developers are in the US, so it could well become an annual event.
So bear with me. Is it intended to be a chance for developers of graphics programs to get together, or is it a chance for actual artists to get together, or are they the same thing?
Well, I see them as the same thing. I see our artists as really the way that we're going to make the programs better. To start off, I'm a GIMP developer, right? Well, I was. I couldn't really claim to be a GIMP developer anymore. I haven't written any code in about 2 years, but
right.
So I think that, you know, artists are essential to making the GIMP actually useful because, you know, developers don't actually draw and stuff like that.
Yeah. So are there loads of artists going to the meeting? Are there loads of artists going to the meeting?
Yes. Right. Well, it's one of my big goals is to get all the artists there, and not just to have developers showing off what they've done, but also to have artists showing off what they can do with the programs and showing
where we can
improve things. Really, to get that synergy going from the creative side and the technical side of the project.
Cool. So
getting more artists involved, you know, because that's something you guys were talking about.
Absolutely, yes, indeed.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. I mean, where did you go to say to artists, we're having this meeting, come along?
Well, it's not like they're completely separate from the development communities. You know, there are artists around the GIMP development community. There are artists around the Inkscape development community. People like Andy Fitzsimon. People like Andreas Nielsen around GNOME, Jim Mack and Tiger T. These are guys who've been around for years.
Yeah.
And they're also, you know, the GIMP has one of the most vibrant user communities around. You know,
really?
You've got user forums coming out your ass. There must be at least 100 different sites of GIMP users, and oftentimes they're living completely apart from the development community. And so I've gone out there and I've been trying to contact all of those forums and get people, make sure people know that this conference is not just for the developers, that it's for them as well.
The people who are coming to the Libro Graphics meeting, are they largely paid for what they do in the projects, or are these people who just do it in their spare time and volunteer?
It's hard to say, really. We did open a registration page. So on the Libro Graphics Meeting webpage, which is www.librographicsmeeting.org.
Ah, okay, good.
Yep.
There's now a registration page up there. But since the conference is free, and you know, we're not insisting that people register, and it's open to all, and it's a conference which we're not, you know, making people pay for. I really have no idea how many people are going to be there and what type of people are going to be there. But from the people who've registered so far, we've got about half and half developers and artists.
Right.
Do you think maybe you'll get some Photoshop people over and maybe convert them?
I don't know.
No?
Don't think so.
Not
really.
Okay, one small question then. How about a Libre Conference UK at Lug Radio Live this year?
Woo!
Yay!
Do you think you can make it over?
me personally, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
Come on, come on.
I have looked at the calendar, and I'd love to, but, you know, I'm a full-time volunteer, father, family man.
Right, okay, fair enough.
So it's kind of tough for me to get away for all of the conferences I'd like to go to.
Bring the family.
You're obviously...
I go to Gwadec every year, try to get to the game conference, and try and fit in one other one, but it's not going to be Lug Radio Live this year.
You're obviously doing a good job of being a full-time volunteer, father, family man. Why don't you be a full-time Lug Radio fan and get your ass over to Lug Radio Live as well? You know it makes sense, Dave. You know it makes sense. So we're expecting our listenership floating along in the Atlantic Ocean. We're expecting them all to email you. So please spam Dave Neary.
Libre Graphics.
Nice one. Thanks a lot, Dave. We appreciate it for you coming on. So
well done for organising all
thanks
that.
For having me.
Yeah,
thanks for having
me. Best of luck with the event.
Cheers,
yeah,
man.
Good luck with it.
Oh, yeah. I nearly missed the one, the blender.
Yes.
Have you heard about Project Orange? Do you know what that is?
Oh, yes.
Project what?
Right. Project Orange.
Yeah, the Blender guys are doing their worldwide premiere of Elephant Stream that weekend.
It's Agent Orange.
Oh, right.
And I've been talking to Tom, and since he can't come because, you know, obviously they're drawing and they're finishing up the film, we've agreed to co-host the world premiere. So
fantastic.
The world premiere of Elephant Stream is also going to happen during the Libre Graphics meeting.
It's an incredible project.
What's the date again?
What's the date for the event again?
The 17th, 18th and 19th of March.
Wow.
In Lyon.
Fantastic.
All of the details of how to get there are on the website.
And what's the website?
The website is www.librographicsmeeting.org.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thanks.
Cheers,
very much.
Dave.
Bye.
Take care, bye.
Bye, Bolsh.
Have a good day.
It's the end of the show. It's time for some emails. No voicemails, I guess.
Just before we do the emails,
We
had Fated sent us an MP3 of herself speaking.
Did she?
Oh, right. And we simply stick it in the show, but we didn't.
Perhaps you should explain who Fated is.
Fated is lady from
Singapore lady.
Philippines? Philippines, Singapore, somewhere.
She lives in Singapore, I'm sure.
Sorry.
And she sent us an MP3 of her speaking to include on the show because...
And why aren't we going to play it?
I think she couldn't access the voicemails, which is the reason why she didn't leave us a voicemail. And it's better quality. So should we play it now?
Let's play it now.
Here we go.
Hi guys, it's Fated here from Hashlug Radio, wishing you all a really good 2006. See you all at Lug Radio Live.
Excellent. I'll tell you what, I mean, if you can't send us a voicemail, definitely send us an MP3.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not too long, eh?
Send it to show@lugradio.org.
That's Neurofound.
And Fated's going to be at Lug Radio Live 2006.
Nice one.
More about that in a bit.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. So let's go to the...
Who's going to start? Shall I start?
Go for it.
You always
all
start.
Donicus.
And rarely finish.
And the last to finish. Lug Radio Marathon is the subject of an email from Nick.
Nick, by the way, is
from Michigan in the good old US of A.
Hey, motherfucker.
Where is Michigan?
Michigan,
the US of
Ohio.
A.
No, I knew that.
It's
where?
In Ohio,
good old
isn't it?
USA of A.
It's one of those sort of middle where? Bits. Isn't
it's
it?
In America. Oh,
right. It's where the lazy ones stayed and became all right wing.
Oh, right. Okay, so.
On you go.
Anyway, Nick says, I've just listened to 42 episodes of Lug Radio in 2 weeks.
Nice. Oh, my goodness.
Hence the title, Lug Radio Marathon, right?
It's a hell of a marathon.
Oh, I thought you was going to send us, like, some marathon chocolate.
That's nearly 2 days'
worth of Snickers, but anyway. My girlfriend tells me that I've started yelling gay in my sleep, bollocks, shite, and other odd obscenities in a British accent. This is much better than I do when I'm just drunk at the pub. and this bit's... I didn't even know to read this bit. It said, question for Jono. As you are simultaneously an omnipotent Lug Radio superstar and musician stroke recording engineer...
Yeah.
And then he's got a great big picture of the chinny raccoon and then the email.
chin.lugradio.org. Is there any way that you could flex some of your open source muscle to get multi-tracking projects moving... that come close to the functionality of Cubase, Sonar, Pro Tools, and the like. Or perhaps just suggest some free ones that are already out there. See you all at Lug Radio Live 06. Nick
Coby
from
Michigan. Coming from Michigan. Wicked.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is pretty awesome.
So, John, have you got an open muscle that you can flex?
I'm always willing to flex my muscles to the open community. Yeah, I mean...
Lug Radio superstar, musician, engineer. He knows how to gift wrap that question, doesn't he?
I'm glad he's coming to Lug Radio Live.
Turd with a bow on it.
Yeah, I mean, there's, as some of you will be familiar, I did some mock-ups of how I think an editor should be, and it's by no means necessarily
that
the perfect
that
Fisher way
of Price thing that you did on YouTube. Is that Fisher Price thing you did on your screen?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So go and have a look at that. Do a search on the Lug Radio Wiki for Jono Edit, and
you get to look at some pictures of what one might look like.
And what one might look like. And a list of people. It shows what it would look like, and a list of people who said they'd be happy to write it.
Oh, right.
And no code. But you know, it's open source, so everybody can scratch my itch.
Again.
Hey, go clockwise.
Oh, meet an email.
That's anti-clockwise, but that's fine.
Ging A-ling.
One here from...
Or if you're American, counterclockwise.
One here from Todd Keltonborn, who nice I assume name. Wrote to us before. He said it's called Mac Intel Response. Yeah. And he says, yeah, okay, so in between the
don't
unintelligible
one,
rants... This is why it's unintelligible, because right. You keep fucking talking, shut up. Basically, he was saying it's proprietary shit. And he says, my question was really in regards to the x86 version of OSX, not the hardware.
But to which... more proprietary than...
How is it any different?
But I don't think anyone claimed the hardware was proprietary, did they?
Skip forward to the chainsaw bit.
We skipped that OSX was proprietary. Oh, you've read this email. Your response chainsaw. Is probably still the same, sir. Your response is probably still the same, though, so fuck me gently with a chainsaw.
Yes.
All right, then. Fair play. Anyway, great show as always. Thanks very much for that, Todd. Cheers.
Whatever floats your boat, man.
Sell you, Mac.
I've got one here from David Huffman, who entitles his email...
Oh, he was great in Knight Rider.
It's the Huff.
Michael, we're about to hit a hazard. High poor shit.
Well, somebody who lives in Hazard, can't
he? Yeah, exactly, shut up. He says, on Saturday, February the 4th, 2006, at 3:16 a.m, he said, hype or shit is his subject line. Because I was just listening to a segment of hype or shit. Hype or shite, I think.
It's hip
it
or
is,
shit.
And realised, why are you ruining all the emails by saying what the best bit is of them? I was just listening. I realised that there's too much confusion between hype, because it can be both good and bad. You probably realise that because we said it ourselves. So, being from the US, use hip or shit with the American accent, as Aid will rudely predict.
Sorry,
as
I thought
might
you
say.
Were misrighting.
Love your love your show, he says. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
The segment's over.
Gone and forgotten. Okay, we've had an email from Dominic Wagenknecht.
Pardon?
Dominic Wagenknecht.
Wow, where's he from?
Wagenknecht.
Is he like some kid's toy where you buy loads of little bits and use them to build a wagon?
Do you remember years ago that Wagenknechts were so much bigger than they are now?
You get four good wagons joke. In a row.
Anyway.
They didn't used to do the jam flavour, either.
No. So, anyway, he says, hi, great show.
Less great now, though, I suspect.
We've took the piss out of your name.
We never do that.
Thanks for the emails. He says, hi, great show. I'm listening to every show since season 1, episode 5.
Well, I haven't listened to that many. That's pretty good.
I did never experience any problems with the MP3 stream under iTunes, Mac and Win, and my iPod Mini. Everything works perfect. And I never listened to a show at once, meaning quite some play, pause, action. Especially with long shows, I start at my iBook, then pause, sync to my iPod, and get directly in when I hit the street. No timing issues whatsoever. I've got no fucking clue what he's talking about.
That makes perfect sense. What he's saying is he listens to the show and he never has any problems with the timing at all.
Which is good.
We've had quite a few emails about the timing thing. I mean, I've got one here from Chris Johnson. We've had a couple of others.
Yep.
And pretty much everyone seems to say that it's because their variable bit rate that it's causing the problem. There are reasons they're VBR, and Matt will explain them.
It makes it half the size.
Yeah.
Hang on, that was a little too technical for me, Matt.
we're debating at the moment what to do, but we might ditch one of the, say, the low MP3 or something like that,
and
replace it
fucking
with a CBR. With
constant bit rate.
Which will make it about 40 mega show, but you've had that in the past anyway.
Yeah.
And more.
Yeah.
He says, by the way... BTW, thanks for explaining bollocks. And he spells it B-O-L-L-U-X. So that's...
Bollocks. Okay.
Is it... B-O-L-L-O-C-K-S.
That's yes, the correct.
That's the Oxford Dictionary.
Oxford bollocks.
By the way, too, EFI is just a BIOS replacement, so if an OS is EFI compliant, you can boot whatever you want.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Mr. Alphabet Soup, is that from?
So I expect Linux to run very smooth on Mac Intel hardware. Microsoft supports EFI with Vista and XP 64-bit. Thanks very much, Dominic Wagenknecht.
Thank.
Excellent. Matt, by the way, did you see that email where they said that they wanted you to say IMO-less?
Yeah, it was Snecklifter.
He was, yeah.
It was Christopher Brown, and you know, when he joined the community, the first thing he said was, "How dare you put Lug Radio Live on the same weekend as Glastonbury?" He didn't get tickets, so I retrospectively have the win there.
Okay. Fair point.
It's like a fine game of chess.
your mum must be very proud.
You may well remember me trying to read an email last week and really finding it quite difficult. And insinuating that my English might not have been first language. Well, they've had another go. And the subject is alcohol and Vi don't mix. So here we go.
I'm excited.
There are actually full stops and paragraphs and commas. They're not in the right places, but he's American, that's fine. I'm sending this email to let you guys know that I can write and that English is my first language and I live in the States, but all my family lives in Yorkshire. Full stop.
Yorkshire!
So far, so good.
Yorkshire tea.
Also, my email from last week's show should really go as a warning not to partake in large quantities of alcohol, listen to Lug Radio, and think that it's a good idea to write a letter in Vi. But anyway, thanks, guys, for reading my email.
Fantastic.
New paragraph.
Oh.
P.S. I agree that wine is not important to Linux, and I do think that it will die off when the market share of Linux gets greater, but it is needed for the transition to give most users choice. In my whole experience of Linux, it's not just been about the operating system, but about a choice. Because even when I install a distribution to whatever that may be, I choose what goes in that install. This could just be my poor reading.
I'm trying to decide whether this is his poor writing or aid being unable to read because he's got his index finger folded in.
Thank you for that. I choose what goes into that install on top of the operating system itself, not just the applications that sit on top of it. And he says, thanks, Jacob. So, Jacob, thanks for writing in and clarifying that. Thanks
NP.
For a few more full stops and all the rest of it.
Excellent.
And Vi is an editor.
Fantastic.
Right, it's going on to me. I have one. Well, I've got a very short email from James Methley who says,
"That's why he gave it to you,
dudes, man.
Yeah, man,
you fucking rock,
yeah, man.
Jim, you do rock.
Thank you.
So that's good. But I'll go on to my proper email.
Yes.
Christopher Yimon, who is our
he did Lady in Red, didn't
Trinidadian in New York.
That's Christopher.
I'm an alien. I'm an legal alien. Christopher Yimon in New York. He says he's been having problems with the MP3 thing as well, his MP3 player cost $15. Anyway, he says the auto package interview was great. He's still a Linux newbie, but when he was a complete newbie, installing Inkscape using auto package was the first time he installed anything without any help.
Excellent.
Which he thinks is one of the niggling problems still facing desktop Linux.
He'd be right.
I remember reading this email.
Yeah. He is right.
He says he still misses the abilities that he had in Windows to just download a program, double click a file, and install it. Me too, man.
Wow. Imagine that. That's just crazy talk.
And he says he hopes that auto package can mature to the point that unless there's some technical barrier my newbie mind can't yet fathom, that he hopes it, you know, matures and goes well.
Yeah.
And, that's a bit... Oh, and he also says that he hopes Trinidad will kick England's arse in the World Cup in Germany.
That's a sport-related thing, and I've no concept of what that means. But he's right about the auto package. I mean, we really want to sort of encourage more people to put their packages into auto package format, including...
Yeah.
So there is an alpha client for Second Life.
There is, yes.
For Linux.
Alpha client.
Yeah.
It's
in alpha mode.
I have tried it. I have filed a bug about it.
I have as well.
Has any of us in this room got it working?
I've got it working, but there's only half a Jono in there.
I've got it working. I managed to connect Second Life and everything. It was all and fine, apart from the fact that the whole middle of the screen was kind of grey. So I could actually see where I was.
It was foggy.
That's the same bug that I've got.
But I managed to walk around. It's all kind of spiky grass. It looks like it's half the triangles it needs to draw, it's drawing just in grey.
I reckon they're pretty damn close, just like a few little fall into place.
But
the point is,
good work.
What we'd really like them to do, as well as produce a Linux client, is produce an auto package for it.
This is the campaign.
That's really going to help spread the install of it. It really is.
We need the Rocky music here. Dun, dun,
absolutely.
Dun,
so,
dun,
partition your bank. No, I mean,
partition your bank.
Never mind.
So, a campaign then. People.
Yes.
If you're interested in seeing a Second Life client at all, some of you were at least, mail the Second Life people and say, thanks for doing the Second Life Linux client, that's really brilliant, can we have an auto package of it, please?
Yep.
And then use the auto package.
Yes.
So do you think at that point they'll just say, fucking hell, what more do you want? You've got the client, now you want an auto package.
But they may, well, after you've done that, perhaps you can mail them and ask for the moon on a stick as well.
that will be
but
useful.
Until then,
the campaign is afoot. Send aid, $10 million.
If you go on Amazon, there is a book called The Moon on a Stick that some woman's written. And it's like one of those kind of Mills and Boons type novels.
Can you get it second hand?
What, the second hand moon on a stick? What?
Never mind.
Anyway, I'd like you guys to do me a favour.
Yeah, okay.
Because
sexual?
Hang on. I want to hear the favour before I agree to it.
This
you
email
got caught out by that last time, right?
Not going to make that mistake twice.
This email comes
not
from
that
BA.
Anyway.
He doesn't be able to get that taste.
I don't know whether it's BA Baracus.
Pitiful.
What?
Have you got the BA?
Have you got it
pocket?
With you?
No.
Oh, you bastard.
Bull.
I haven't. He got, for his birthday, have
Mr.
you got
T.
it?
Wait.
He might have it.
Wait.
But surely.
Just wait.
Surely it's not Creative Commons.
This is
yes.
Get in.
Prepare yourself for this.
Get up, bull.
I completely forgot about it. For my birthday, I got a Mr. T in your pocket.
Excellent.
Which is
so, Mr. T, how are you doing?
I pity the bull.
And what are you doing today, Mr. T?
Don't give me no back talk, sucker.
Total quality item. So, have this and this only to say.
First name, Mr. Middle name, period. Last name, T.
It's Firebox.com if you want one.
So, we've had an email from BA.
There's one.
Well, there's an email here right in front of me. I've never seen so many of the word flock in an email.
No.
This guy seems to like flock. So I'd like you to do the
flock off then.
When I say the word flock. Are you all ready? Thank you. Yeah,
just a test.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey guys, recently I've tried a browser called Flock. Yes, Flock. When I heard it, I thought it was as if hell froze over and penguins could fly. It's based on Firefox. Yes, I know. Firefox is perfect, and there's no point in trying anything else. Wrong. I tried it, and I was totally blown away. Maybe you could interview someone at Flock. Check out their browser at www.flock.com and their IRC at irc.flock.com /flock. Yes, go try it. Go flock yourself.
We've actually been in touch with the Flock blokes.
Yeah, I'm actually going to try.
I'll be honest with you. All I can really say to the bloke is,
shut up, fool.
I haven't tried it, so I will try it.
The Flock blokes are going to possibly come on at some stage.
Are they?
Yeah. Okay. They've been in touch. We've been in touch. Blah, blah, blah.
There's a couple of emails there if you want to read
Zach
them.
Missed one.
El Gingaling.
Okay. The Christian Jones has written in and said, like many of the presenters, I am for the moment an Ubuntu user. I tried the Suzy Live Eval disc for the first time and really was gobsmacked. Put simply, it was the most special Linux experience I've ever had.
Exceptional.
It made the things that should be easy, easy.
Shut up, fool.
No. I'm being semi-serious here. Suzy's obviously doing a good job for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when was the last time you tried Suzy? Fucking ages.
2002.
I've been sold it very recently. That was open.
It's all green, isn't it?
I installed it very recently, then I overwrote it with Ubuntu.
Is this? Yeah, I mean, he says the Suzy Live Eval disk. Is that Open Suzy, or is it Suzy with proprietary bits?
Open Suzy's really pared back from what I've read.
Is this a partially proprietary Suzy or not? I don't really know about what they're doing.
I've no
Me
idea.
No, no.
Me no, no. Email us in if you know.
To show at lugradio.org.
Now, I think this is our final
email
of episode 9. It's from Hector Centeno García. He says, hello.
That wasn't very patronising, was it?
I was recently introduced to your show by a good friend of mine, and in the past week I've been catching up with it. It's a great show, congratulations.
Thank you.
Basically, he says it makes his faith in Linux and the open source world feel more solid and supported. Which is one of the things that we aim for.
Fantastic.
I never thought anybody would aim for saying that.
In my throat.
I'm disappointed.
But he says, it seems that you haven't touched the subject of Linux as a multimedia workstation.
Ooh, I believe we have.
Particularly in the professional audio and music area. It could be good to hear an analysis from you about it. For example, which distros are best? Is there a need for a specialised distro that compromises usability for performance? And is it better to have a user-friendly distro like Ubuntu to cover this area? So, I mean, there is dial-a-bollock, isn't there, and things
yeah,
like
I
that.
Mean, I understand the bloke's point, but we haven't touched really how Linux applies to string theory either for the same reason, which is that we don't fucking know anything about it.
So,
John,
I think we've covered, I mean,
I know a bit about
thing in the past, haven't we?
Recording. But, yeah, I mean, we've covered the reason why Linux audio stuff isn't so good on many an occasion, but we've not really talked about the kind of distributions and stuff like that to use. Apparently Planet CCRMA is really good.
Yeah. Well, he mentions Agnula, which is Debian derivative.
She's gorgeous.
Planet CCRMA based on Fedora, and Musix, which, as well as applications like Arda, Muzi, and Rose Garden.
Yeah, Arda's getting better, incidentally. They're redesigning lots of it, so...
People who do audio-related software, email us and tell us what's good about it and why we should use it and so on.
Yeah. We should get the Arda bloke on and do an interview sometime.
Yeah.
And...
That's some good shit right there.
Can I?
You're not Mr. T in his pocket.
Keep talking for a second while I bring something up in the old pooter.
Okay, what are you like to bring up on the old pooter?
So don't forget to send us some MP3s to show@logradio.org.
Oh, anyway, I was going along the street.
Shut the fuck up, you stupid Irish.
You said to keep talking.
I do like it, but it's beginning to grate.
You didn't need
that. We need that. Right, so John's going to tell you now about the Lug Radio Live 2006 official hotel.
Oh!
Which is probably sold out by now, judging by the need.
Woot.
We dossed the hotel today.
their phone line.
Earlier on today, I confirmed the hotel, the official Lug Radio Live 2006 hotel. And it is the quality hotel in Wolverhampton.
Quality, man!
It's the same one as last year. So those of you who came
last
year...
Well, one of the same ones.
Those of you who came last year will remember two hotels. One was the very small one, which was the Baron's Court.
With the woman who was near death.
With the parrot and the woman.
And the Wi-Fi.
Unbelievable. It sounds like an episode of The Archers.
Faulty Towers.
And the other one was... It was Faulty Towers, wasn't it? And the other one was... thank you. And the other one was the Quality Hotel. And we've got the Quality Hotel for the same rate. Now, it's the Quality Hotel Wolverhampton, which is on the Penn Road, Wolverhampton, WV3OER.
Which is the zip code if you're American.
Yep. The phone number is 01902-429-216.
Sorry, what was that? That was plus 44?
That's plus 440-1902.
No.
Knock off
plus
the zero.
44-1902.
Oh, we leave the zero off, don't we?
That's what it's in brackets.
Why do people put in brackets if no one ever uses it?
429-216.
Yep. You don't care about the fax number. Let's talk about money. Well, this is a 3-star hotel, complete with a swimming pool and sauna. This includes breakfast, and it's going to be It's normally £56 a night for a single room. It's going to be £27.50 a night.
I live around the corner from there. I might just stay there because it's so
cheap. I know.
You get a swimming pool, man,
and
breakfast.
The double room is normally £70.
You need to get near water.
The double room is normally... Shut the fuck up. The double room is normally 70 crinkly pocket fellas, and it's now £55, okay?
Bring your armbands, because there is a pool.
Here's a question. Why haven't we booked the Captain Bastard... What was it called?
Captain Bastard Hotel.
I'd stay there.
Because it's too small.
All right, okay.
And it'd be nice to have everyone in the same hotel. This is probably going to sell out fairly soon.
Yeah, well, it's already done a lot of business.
There's something like 50-odd rooms left when I talk to them. So get booking quickly. People are already starting to pile in. And earlier on today, someone announced... In fact, it's at the bottom of this forums thread. I thought it was
Alan Popey.
I thought it was most fucking amusing.
Alan Popey.
What did he say?
So Popey, who is god of comedy, as we've already described in the past. Should we take this in parts? Can I be Popey?
Okay.
Who wants to be the woman?
Can I be the one?
Okay. Hello, can I book a room for...
Is this Lug Radio?
Yes.
I need to call you back.
Oh, no rooms.
No, every phone call coming in is for the event, and I haven't had a chance to put the book into the computer yet.
Oh, does this mean there's likely to be no availability?
No, it means I haven't put the bookings on the computer, so I don't know what the availability is.
We dossed the hotel.
Yes, yes.
We had too many people ringing up. And they
phones ringing off the hook.
It was literally a DDoS attack, actually.
I suspect it may be phone ringing off the hook.
So, the hotel's there. Go and book in. It's on the 22nd and 23rd of July.
There are other hotels that it fills up, so...
Yeah, we can get the Baron's Court or the other one.
Captain Bastard.
The Best
Captain
Western.
Bastard, yeah. There's Best Western, there's...
it's Wolverhampton. It's loads of places to stay.
There is loads of places. Hyatt.
There's the Wolverine, which you should avoid at all costs.
Should we talk about who's going to be speaking quickly?
Oh, yeah.
The lovely Sarah Ewan, for instance.
Sarah Ewan.
Will she be speaking quickly?
Possibly. Why?
Oh, wouldn't she speak at normal speed?
She might do, but it depends on whether she's doing speed
PlayStation 2.
Equally lovely Michael Meeks.
Michael Meeks from Open Office. I don't know whether he's equally lovely.
He's
a very respectable guy.
Is
he equally likely to show up this year?
Ooh. That's a little harsh on Sarah.
That is a bit harsh on Sarah. She tried her best last year.
She tried her best to not fucking try.
She's coming this year. She promised us she was coming this year, so we're looking forward to seeing her.
I've heard that she's taped her passport to her body already, so she can't lose it.
She's a great sport.
For the journey up from
London. Glad she's coming along. We've got Matthew Garrett, the big G-man, who's coming along to talk about Linux and laptops. He's got 48 laptops piled in
how many?
His room. Something like 48 laptops piled
in. Is he going to bring some with him?
He does all of the Linux ACPI, PI, CIPI stuff.
You don't know what that
Chris
means.
Waddle.
Who's he work for?
He works Canonical.
ACPI, PI, PI is who he works for.
ACPI.
they literally are Canonical.
Smith.
John Leach.
Elliot Smith.
Ah. Everybody loves Eric
John
Rage.
Leach. Everybody loves John Leach.
Everybody loves John Leach. He's a god.
Yeah, he's a nice bloke.
Elliot Smith, who I work with, he's coming down to talk about Ruby on Rails. He's a bit of a Ruby on Rails guru, you know, is Elliot.
Is he?
He's shaping up to be
like
the UK's Ruby on Rails
guru.
Yeah, he's a real star when it comes to
Hadamaya Hansen, then.
No.
He's in Denmark.
That's a value name, isn't it?
It is. You get full value for money out of that bloke.
It's a very metal name.
Yeah. So, doesn't pass the telephone.
Who else is coming?
Textbox Steinberg.
Tom Steinberg. Tom Steinberg from My Society and who did the Pledge Bank Project, among other things.
There's a rendering error, it appears, on this page.
Textbox Steinberg.
Ewan Spence, who's the most mental Scottish man ever.
He's the funniest man alive.
He's
doing the TBC talk, isn't he?
He's going to talk about TBC.
Is that a new disease that you can only get from C?
It's the talk that likes to say yes.
Fucking no one is going to hear that.
The heroic Christian Charlotte's coming over. Paintball extraordinaire.
He is. He's coming over to talk about G-Streamer. Martin van der Streek, who's Drunax on the forums.
I swore at him on IRC in Dutch. And he was quite offended until he realised I was joking.
Really?
He goes, whale's penis. Like that to me.
Isn't that a compliment?
He gave...
people from Wales.
I met him at Euroscon and he gave me a bag that said Bolotsky on it. It's absolutely brilliant.
He also emailed me an audio file of you saying some Dutch word when you were very drunk. And he thought I'd find it really funny. It was just you going, Godushk, or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah. I think it was Ginger Tosser in Dutch.
Ian
Lynch is coming to talk about Open Document and probably the Open Document Fellowship.
All right.
He's a good guy. Alex Hudson, the HUD man.
Hula.
Solid Moo, as is known to his friends. He's going to talk about Hula. Martin Vogel is coming to talk about the BBC Action Network. The Block Man, Matthew Block, is coming to talk about bite mark and virtualization.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah. Hero to many, that bloke.
Mr. Riddell.
Is he back?
Jonathan Riddell's coming to talk about KD4 and Kubuntu Dapper. And let's not forget Bruno Board.
Bruno.
His talk is called This Talk May Contain Swearing.
Hey.
Bruno Board, known as Kno to his fellow Lug Radio community members, will provide a fun statistical journey through the world of Lug Radio swearing.
Aye.
Sounds like a Disney ride, doesn't it? and the final confirmation we've got at the moment, and we're still in the process of organising names.
Oh, loads,
by no means the last person.
Oh, no.
And it sounds like a yoghurt is Mirko Muller.
Is that really his name?
Low fat as well. a natural way to view your files with a twist.
He's got this whole kind of new desktop environment thing.
Which is very interesting. Fat, yeah.
I haven't quite worked out whether he's actually invented it or whether he just invented a load of screenshots of it. It looks really cool.
He's Max Lowe on the IRC channel. So we're also going to have Lug Radio Live and Unleash, which is going to be on the first day. We're going to have
Masturbate.
The Masturbate on both days. We're going to have little fucking debate panels and
buffs and
buffs.
And
loads more room
and
shares.
And loads of
Windows
random cool
that
stuff.
Actually open.
Yeah.
Windows open.
Loads of random cool stuff dotted around the place that we're not going to tell you about until you get there.
We've got so much stuff planned. You will not believe it. So come and stay.
Ask me to wear a dress.
No, he isn't. Absolutely not.
Zalia suggested that we do a fancy dress party on the Saturday night.
Oh, that's
you're
good.
You're not
idea.
Coming as Edmund again. I'll be
I've got my vicar outfit.
I wouldn't mind coming as an ostrich.
I look fucking wicked as
you'd mind coming in an ostrich?
Well, that as well.
Okay. You're like Bernie. Well, I wouldn't mind coming in Bernie Clifton.
You know, like Bernie Clifton, the way he was with an ostrich. I'd like to say I came second in a talent competition when I was six as Bernie Clifton in an ostrich outfit.
The way he was with an ostrich.
Right, thanks. Right. And, okay.
So I also went as the Invisible Man. My mum just wrapped bog rock.
So look radio dot.
Was it invisible / live?
The invisible Bernie Clifton.
I want a lot of invisible bog rock right now. Amazing.
That's just an excuse for bad hygiene.
I wipe my ass with invisible bog roll.
Shit all over your head. Anyway, Look Radio Live, 22nd, 23rd of July. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah.
Yep.
Bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.